Good morning.
And good morning.
This is Positively Revolting, and we are the talk radio show. What do we do, Ani? This is, I am your host, Lynn, and the hostess, Ani.
That is right. I'm here. It is about 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. And this morning, well, first of all, Lynn, what was that music? People always ask.
That's right. That's right. That was Ben Harper singing Better Way.
It was. People always ask when you play.
I know, and we forget to say.
So there's
credit
that.
Where credit is due.
Out of the way there. So on we go with the discussion this morning. We're very excited to have with us Dr. Paul Gorman. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And Dr. Paul Gorman is a member of the Mad as Hell Doctors and Physicians. He's working hard to educate the public about single-payer health care models.
It's back. We're talking
back.
About it again.
And better than ever.
Yeah.
And for those of us who, you know, strongly prefer a single-payer and had really gotten a little disheartened over the discourse over the last year, I am thrilled to see a resurgence of this movement. And there is, in fact, a conference that is happening tomorrow at the First Unitarian Church downtown at Southwest 12th and Main. And in fact, U.S. Representative John Conyers is the keynote speaker tomorrow.
Yes, he is.
So that is a great opportunity to check out what is happening in this movement and how you can help make action out of the theory and actually move this forward. So let's go ahead and start with... Let's talk about Mad as Hell Doctors and Physicians.
So Mad as Hell Doctors is a group of Oregon physicians that got started a little more than a year ago. It's a sort of an offshoot from a large national group called the Physicians for National Health Program. Now, PNHP, Physicians for National Health Program, has been around for ages, and it's a national organization that's been promoting single-payer. They wrote the first physician's proposal for a single-payer plan that was published years ago, and they've done a lot of research that sort of provides the foundation for why we need to change. Mad as Hell Doctors is a group that got started in Oregon last year based on that expression from a movie a few years back ago, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right.
And a bunch of the physicians in Corvallis area and some others here in Portland just said, let's take this message on the road. So they bought a big trailer, got some folks that know about how to organize things, Adam Klugman and Gary Jelinek, and off they went and visited about 26 cities on a caravan from Portland to Washington, D.C. And one of the cool things they did, every town they went to, they would have a town hall inviting people in, and they had this thing called a Mad as Hell moment. And the Mad as Hell moment was a time for anybody that showed up to get 1 minute with the microphone. You only got 1 minute.
Uh-huh.
They had certain rules. It wasn't about anger. It wasn't about rage and that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
It was about change. But people got to tell their story. And if you go online and find the website, some of these videos are very compelling. They got a really good reception in city after city. They told stories about, you know, being at some remote gas station in Wyoming or someplace, and everywhere they went, they found lots of support for single-payer. Kind of striking to hear their stories from the road about all the support for single-payer and then look in the newspaper and the news industries and hear nothing about single-payer.
That is fascinating, isn't it?
It is fascinating.
And let's just go ahead and give a brief overview of what single-payer is for anyone that hasn't really fully assessed what these differences are between these public-private sort of conglomerated things and single-payer.
So what we mean by single-payer, what's in the single-payer bill that's going to be proposed in the Oregon legislature very soon and what's being proposed in Vermont right now in about 6 or 8 other states, actually, we mean publicly funded, privately delivered health care. We don't mean government-controlled, rationing socialized care, all that's kind of buzzwords that you hear to get fear in people's minds. What we mean is public funding, which means all the money gets put in one pot.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important that we put the money together. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to spend more money. It means that we stop dividing ourselves into little groups and trying to make the price different for everybody so that people who are sick can't afford what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you put all the money in one pot, a single risk pool, and that becomes one large public fund. And healthcare is paid for out of that public fund. Privately delivered means you still have the same doctors, the same hospitals, the same healthcare system we
and
have.
And probably more of a choice, I'm assuming.
Way more choice. Way more choice. In fact, think about it. You don't get to choose what health plan you can have. That's your employer's decision. Your employer decides what health plans to offer, which one's not. And if your employer doesn't offer the one you want, that's not possible for you to get it.
Or if you're a self-employed person, what one you can possibly afford.
Well, for sure.
You don't get to really choose either.
So you really can't choose your health plan. And then once you have a health plan, you don't get to choose your hospital because the health plan decides which hospitals. And you don't get to choose your doctor because the health plan decides which doctors it covers. So you really don't have choice there. And then once you have found a hospital and a doctor, you don't get to choose your treatments because the health plan decides what's covered. So we actually have no choice in all those areas now. Under single payer, you could go to any hospital you want. You could go to any doctor you want. There wouldn't be doctors that cover you or don't cover you or accept you or don't accept you. Everybody's covered under the same system. So there's none of this rigmarole we go through now.
I would assume this would be easier on doctors as well.
Oh, it'd be light. It'd be a dream. Right now in the United States, I just got a message the other day that one of the groups that we refer to no longer takes a certain kind of health plan. Their contract is over. So we have to, when we try to refer someone for care, we have to know what health plan they have and whether it's covered and whether this guy accepts that coverage. Under single payer, we never have to worry about any of that stuff. All we have to worry about is what do you need and where's the best place for you to get it. So single payer not only makes it easier for us in terms of all that sort
of
worry.
Think of the paperwork, the trees that would be saved by this also.
And the paperwork, the paperwork is substantial. In fact, some of the PNHP physicians did this study comparing Canadian physicians to U.S. Now, let me explain Canadian. In Canada, they have this system. Doctors and hospitals are private.
Right.
But there's a public insurance plan that pays for all the care.
Right.
So instead of having hundreds of insurance companies, you just have one. Canadian physicians save about $500 per capita in terms of the billing and administrative expense. Canadian hospitals save about $500 per capita. That adds up to about $350 or $400 billion a year that's just being spent.
You're talking real money.
We're talking some serious change. That's enough money to cover all the people in the United States who aren't getting insurance right now.
If you're interested in discussing single-payer health care and talking with Dr. Paul Gorman here, please do call us at our studio line, 503-231-8187. We were talking about, the sort of freedom of choice that single-payer actually would allow us. And that is such a, an apparent contradiction if you listen to the hype and the propaganda coming from those that want to move us in a different direction, wouldn't
well,
you say?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think the mythology that's maintained is that the myth that's promulgated by those who don't want to see change happen is that we want to preserve choice. But in fact, as we just talked about, we actually have way less choice. We have less choice than people do in any other industrialized democracy. All the countries that provide better care and produce more health for fewer dollars have better choice than we have. We have less choice than those other countries. And as Teresa said, said, we don't have choice about having a job. You can't, right. If you got a great idea for a business you want to start, you want to start a small business and do whatever it is you think you'd like to do, you can't do that in the United States because you won't have health insurance. And we're sort of handcuffed to jobs rather than taking the best job that we can get. So the impact on small business is actually very negative in our country.
Well, even large, I believe Toyota went to Canada instead of, it was someplace in Kentucky or Tennessee. I don't remember exactly which state, because they didn't want to have to pay for health care.
Well, certainly the health care cost for large industries is really crippling. By the way, something that came up during the break, I want to put out a challenge. Given the fact that more than half of the doctors in the country support government, a publicly funded mm-hmm. plan that covers everyone, and the fact that a majority of Americans, when you ask them that, support a national plan that covers everybody. We know there's terrific support for this idea, and yet during the campaign over the last year, you never hear about it on the commercial news industry. So if there's anyone from the commercial news industry out there who's listening right now, I put a challenge out to you. Look back through your broadcasting for the last year and see if you can find the word single payer ever being mentioned on the air. And if it hasn't been, and you see that most doctors and most people support this idea, and if you poll nurses, you'll find the same thing, how about giving it at least a mention?
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent challenge, because I have to say, when it is mentioned in such a, well, I have to say, skewed from my perspective, light in that, well, again, we hear about the death panels, we hear about the lack of choice. And it's one of those situations where we're really through the looking glass and, day is night.
Well, and progressives, even, who might be inclined towards single payer, have taken a position that it's not possible. It's kind of crazy.
It's not just pragmatic. Too far out there.
So it reminds me, I was reading about Elizabeth Cady Stanton at the first Women's Rights Conference. And what I read was that she wanted to insist that the Statement of Rights, the Declaration, include the right to vote. And people said, well, no, you can't do that. That's too crazy. That's too ridiculous. That's too far out to ask that women be able to vote. And Stanton stood her ground. It took obviously decades and decades to win that battle. But we're kind of in the same position now, where the obviously right thing to do, we're told by some, isn't really possible. And some progressives have backed off and said, well, let's just ask for what we can get for.
Which is sad. It's a sad statement of our fallen expectations. But when we know that it is the right thing to do, and we know it because it is solidly backed by the majority of people.
There are 52
who are just plain
organizations, I believe.
About healthcare. Then we know it's the move that we need to make. Conch has joined us on the line. I want to remind folks of that phone number, 503-231-8187. If you'd like to join this conversation this morning on single-payer healthcare and the conference that's coming up tomorrow, which we'll get to in just a moment. Hey, Conch.
Oh, great to hear everybody. And I am a member. Everybody who calls up, I challenge them to call the other number and become a member, too, of KBOO.
An excellent idea.
And great. It's great to hear the doctor here. And, when I lived in Canada for a year, and up there, their system was called Medicare. And, our system here is called Medicare, and we could just extend the system and call it Medicare for all.
How did it work for you in Canada?
It worked for, I have health insurance right now. This is funny. I'm looking at a site called America's Health Insurance Plans, where they say Oregon single-payer system could increase health care costs by 30%. And I think that's really funny, because my health insurance policy went up by, I think, about 30% in the last year and a half. And I haven't noticed that I've gotten any reduction in my co-pays. I haven't noticed that anything has changed, except that a whole lot of attack ads against politicians have been paid for by, health insurance plans like mine, which is Health Net. In Canada, I was a non-citizen, and yet I would go in and I would get medical care and dental care, and I would get charged out of pocket, but that charge would be about the same amount that my copay here costs. And for that, it's hundreds of dollars a month.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Yeah, I remember that ad, that American Health Insurance Plan ad. It was something that the AHIP produced in 2002 when Measure 23 was on the ballot. They didn't really do much until the last 8 weeks or so before the election, and then they just pounded the airwaves with that kind of stuff. Too late to be rebutted effectively, which it could have been had they released that stuff earlier, and just on time to make Measure 23 lose. I think we can expect, as we make progress in Oregon, that the same thing will happen. They'll stay in the background until they can expend their money most effectively, and then they'll come out with that kind of non-truth when it's too late to rebut. So I'm glad you're doing this now, trying to get the word out so people understand how things work and what we can do before that happens.
Do you guys have some sort of strategy for it, since you know that that's what's going to happen?
Well, we're working on that. Vermont, it has a bill in their legislature. They have a governor who ran on a single-payer platform. There's about at least six states that are working on single-payer right now. In Oregon's
Pennsylvania, California.
Maryland. California has passed single-payer a couple of times.
And
The governor vetoed it. But we know that people
but
support
Jerry's there
this.
Now.
And so our strategy right now, tomorrow, is the single-payer conference. We're really thrilled to have the single-payer conference. Last June, we asked Senator Wyden a group of Jobs with Justice and Physicians for a National Health Program folks met with Senator Wyden and asked if he would promise to basically run interference for us at the federal level so that any state waivers that were needed could be obtained so the state could take its own action and do mm-hmm. what Oregonians want for Oregon. And he agreed to do that. So thanks to him, he's not a single-payer supporter, but he's a state choice supporter. And that paved the way for us to then get excited about moving in Oregon in a direction that Oregonians want. And our job in single-payer advocacy is to get Oregonians to want single-payer. That's what tomorrow's meeting is all about. Margaret Flowers from the National Physicians for National Health Program will be there. Congressman Conyers, who's been a staunch single-payer advocate for ages, will be there to get us all excited. Katie Robbins from Healthcare Now is going to help us get organized. And the day isn't so much about preaching to the choir. It's getting together and talking about action. What can we do in Oregon over the next few months to get single-payer onto the legislature and to get it passed?
We are here talking about single-payer healthcare and living empowered lives in oh so many ways. Right now, we're going to shift the conversation into taking direct action and taking things from theory into action, which is one of the themes of this conference, right?
It absolutely is. One thing that's going to be forthcoming in the next few months, the Mad as Hell doctors are going to be on the road again.
They're addicted. You guys just love the road. Huh?
Well, they sure do. And so there's going to be a series of appearances. I don't have the schedule with me, but they'll be on the coast going through a number of towns on the coast. Then in the valley shortly after that. So over the next few months, we'll be seeing Mad as Hell town halls in a variety of cities like Newport and Salem and so forth.
I would assume they'll put that on the web.
That'll be on their website. That's right. And I think I don't remember the website, but it's easy to find.
Just madashelldoctors.com is actually. madashelldoctors.com. Nothing
so
mysterious.
So they'll start another series of town halls. And I think if you can't make it to the conference, certainly log on to the website and we'll be making more and more information available. There are lots of single payer sites that you can get connected to, like Healthcare Now. I think that the only way this is going to move forward is for people to make their preferences known. If more than half of Americans support this idea, then we need to let the people in power know that that's what they need to put across. I think some legislatures have stood up. Our Senator Merkley said he would vote for single payer if it came to the floor of the Senate, and we thank him for that support. That's a really courageous stand that most legislators have not been willing to take. And if our legislators know that we support them, then they're in a position to take action and take a stand.
Excellent. We have on the line with us Brian. Good morning, Brian. You're on the air.
Good morning. thank you, Doctor, for being mad as hell. It's about time a lot more people are. I when you come to the coast, I've actually offered this to Obama, but being ignored, but I would be glad to help you out. I am a poster boy for what can happen to you if you get sick and you're self-employed in this country. I've gone from a good six-figure income to practically penury because I got seriously ill once, and I've got an essay about it and all kinds of stuff. And I'd like to offer to, when you come to the coast, to stand up and be counted and do a little spiel on your behalf. This is the main reason, apart from certain political stands, I have never become a U.S. citizen. You can't do much about it if they drag you into the ER or half dead, but if something happens to me, I can still go back to Europe and get it free. But what kills me is that why business is against it, I don't know, because it makes sense. I mean, it frees them from having to provide employees with healthcare costs, which, as you know, are getting more and more penurious. And so it makes sense from a business point of view as well. So, and just I'll let you go, and you can, if you want to get my number and call me to help you on your coastal drive and even the valley, I'd be glad to do it. But I used to pitch and do a bit of programming for cable, so here's another pitch. Single payer or national health care is kind of like supporting cable. If you take a little out of, take a little bit out of the listeners that support you, it gets out to the listeners that don't. And it's the same in a national healthcare system. If you take, you know, everybody that's working pays taxes a bit, and it's not that much really. And it supports, it gives healthcare to the whole nation. And to me, it's not a system if it's not for everybody. Yeah, I'm a rabid socialist, and I'm proud of it. But as I say, if you want to have me help you in any way when you come to the coast, I'll leave my number with the engineer. He probably knows it well anyway.
So, that'd be good. What's your name again?
Brian.
Brian, listen, sorry to hear about your health problems, and we'd love to have you appear at one of our town halls. So if you log on the website, you can get the schedule, and I'm sure your story would be, people would be very interested to hear the story that you were telling. It's a reminder to us that all of us, insured or not insured, are just an illness away from bankruptcy and not being insured. You know, last year we learned that two-thirds of bankruptcies in the United States are caused by medical problems, and three-quarters of those people that went bankrupt had insurance when they got sick.
As did I.
Just like Brian.
And so every, you know, it was accelerated by the plunge in the economy, obviously, but, you know, it's... For a country that values free enterprise so much, it's one of the biggest burdens that free enterprise can bear is both taking your work away from you and not being able to work because you... And by the way, I have no complaints about the treatment I got. Excellent care, and I'm in good health now, but my God, it's killed me. You know, I'm like starting from the bottom again. I've even had to cut my contributions to KBOO because of this, but... it's important enough to me that I send something every month or have it taken out. And again, folks, do you want to leave the airwaves to Fox and Glenn Beck and people like that? Community radio is the only place you're going to get this kind of information, and that's why it's so important to me. So that's my little pitch for
Brian,
people.
Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Your call this morning.
Okay.
It's really good to hear from you. We also have Tom on the line. Good morning, Tom.
Well, I don't mean to get people riled up, but...
Rile us.
Well, an important public health issue to me is fluoridation of public water supply. A number of Oregon communities, Corvallis, Beaverton, Salem, Astoria, the Dalles, there's quite a few more, do have it, but we can't seem to get a statewide bill through as... And quite a number of other states have to get, what the Centers for Disease Control and other organizations call one of the greatest public health achievements of the 20th century. We can't get a statewide fluoridation bill through. I wonder if the doctor has any opinions on that one way or the other.
Well, I do. Without getting into local, I think one of the issues there is just local, you know, local organizations wanting to control their own destiny and what's done where they live. But I think you're bringing up a really important point, which is dental care, and also sort of just a general public health point of view. And some of the other reasons that we advocate single payer, first of all, dental care, basic dental care is a huge necessity and is very, very absent for a large number of Americans. And one of the things we put in the single payer bill is basic dental care, so everybody can get their teeth taken care of. And that's a critical thing you're bringing up. The second is a more public health view that looks more broadly, not just at the individual problems of those that have insurance and ignoring the rest of the population, but what's the broad public health implications of how we're spending our healthcare dollars and how can we spend them better to improve health as opposed to generate revenue for large organizations.
Okay, so you think fluoridation is a good idea?
Well, that's what I understand from my dentist, who tells me if I'm living in a place where I don't get it in the water, then I need to use a fluoride rinse because it definitely is effective at reducing cavities. And again, with a single payer program, you have the ability to take those kind of public health actions that work in everybody's behalf.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
And we have Pear on the line. Good morning, Pear.
Good morning. Hey, the point I've been trying to make to the mainstream media, but it gets ignored, and it's that, you know, the Netherlands has one of the best healthcare systems in the world, and they pay, I think, $3,700 per capita, and we pay $7,200 per capita, and it just seems to me, tell me if my logic is wrong, that if we could replicate their system, we'd cut our health care bill by about 45%.
Well,
I don't think we need to replicate their system. We have one in place, don't we?
Well, we have Medicare for all. You're absolutely right, though. Most industrialized democracies, first of all, cover everybody. Most of the other countries in the world that have any resources at all cover everyone in their population. Second, they spend about half what we spend. Our annual per capita expenditures are at over 7,000, getting close to 8,000 per capita. The average for other nations in the world is closer to 4,000, the mentioned number you mentioned for the Netherlands.
But do their insurance companies make as much money as ours do?
Well, some of them don't have insurance companies.
None
of them have insurance companies that compete on the basis of trying to get healthy, wealthy people on their rolls and excluding everybody else. None of them have insurance companies that compete on the basis of excluding people that need health care and enrolling people that don't. All of them have, those that do have insurance companies, and there are some multi-insurance company nations like Germany and Switzerland. Actually, I heard that in Switzerland, they compete on the basis of how fast they pay your claim. And all of them have far, far lower administrative costs than we do in the United States, where the costs that insurance companies incur, what they call their loss ratio, means that insurance companies are wasting about 20% of the healthcare that dollars that are being spent are wasted in the health insurance industry. That's not their profit. That's their administrative expense. That's their advertising expense. That's all their other things that aren't actually going for healthcare. And if we got rid of the insurance companies, in addition to the $350 or $400 billion I mentioned before, that 20% that the insurance companies are basically wasting on paperwork, we could actually spend on drugs that people need and healthcare that people need. For comparison, Medicare administrative expense is under 5%. The VA is on the order of 3%. Mm-hmm. Taiwan, which has a single payer system, is 2%. So enormous amount of money could be saved by switching to a single payer system.
And what did I think it was in Michael Moore's movie? What country? It was either France or maybe China, even where the doctors got bonuses for the most healthy people.
Imagine that.
It's a thought. You can dream. We can dream.
You know, it seems that it makes no sense to me that this is such a really large populist sort of based movement, a very grassroots movement, as individuals realize this is the thing that makes sense. And yet we hear from, the right wing, the Tea Party members that healthcare reform is a bad thing, that it's going to, that those myths that we talked about earlier, restrict our choices, bring on the oncoming doom of socialism, and all of that.
Death panels.
How can you convince folks who have swallowed that Kool-Aid that single payer is a good idea?
I think that's a difficult task, but I think that fundamentally there's a lot of different arguments you can make. The economic argument is clear. Single payer system is better for small business, big business. It's better for individuals. You get better health for less dollars. So the economics are clear. I think the choice we talked about, there's more choice. And people in the Tea Party, I think I get the sense that those are folks that are very interested in freedom and choice. And I think a third thing is a moral argument, which we haven't talked about yet. But I think the moral argument is unshakable. It just hasn't been connected to people. If someone near you is dying and you can help them, you should. And that's something that doesn't matter what your faith is, what your background is. The idea, if you're there and someone's dying and you're able to help them, then you should. And in this country, 45,000 people die every year because they don't have health insurance. That's more than breast cancer. That's more than prostate cancer. It's a huge number. People are dying and we can help them. Mm-hmm. And the moral argument is we should. That, regardless of your faith, there's a friend of mine from Saudi Arabia was giving me quotes from the Quran that support that. Of course, in the Christian Bible, there's a statement, whatever you do to the least of thy brethren, you do to me. I think all faiths have that kind of connection. Mm-hmm. I think no one's made that connection to Tea Party folks, but I think those people are patriots who want the best for their country and don't really have the facts and maybe participate in some myths. Very few people, I think, would disagree with the moral argument we just talked about.
It's except for the religion of capitalism.
That's a very different religion.
Mm-hmm. There's that. Let's go ahead and talk to Joe, shall we?
Why not?
Yes, good morning,
excellent,
ladies and gentlemen.
Joe.
I listen to KBOO every Monday morning and listen to Health Watch with Dr. David Neiman. And one of the books that I got as a, whenever you call it, a little gift from KBOO, and I just went out and pulled it out of the archives here. It's called The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson. And I already knew that fluoride was bad before I got it. I just wanted to have this as a backup. And before I go on about the fluoride thing, and I'll make this quick, I promise, I want to ask the doctor's opinion, if he's still on the line there, about...
Paul is still with us in the studio.
He's right. We have him chained to the chair. He can't go anywhere just yet.
Rather than having medical insurance and dental insurance, roll it all into one, for crying out loud, because the dental problems create a lot of the medical problems. Hello, where in the hell are these people in the medical industry? What have they been using for brains for the last 150 years, you know? A lot of the dental, like I said, and you already know that, a lot of dental problems, heart disease is one of them. But just recently here, I even heard in the in the national news that they said, well, even though fluoride is supposed to be good for you, maybe we should cut back on the amount that we're doing, because now they've found that a lot of kids are getting brittle bones and brittle teeth and getting deformed teeth and discolored teeth.
Joe, I do want to keep the show focused on the single-payer health care issues.
Well, I think Joe makes an important point that we ought to, and we talked about it before, dental care is essential. Everybody should be able to get basic dental care when your teeth are, you should have preventive care so you don't get into trouble, and when you have problems, you ought to be able to get care. I just saw somebody in the free clinic about a week ago. She had a terribly painful tooth abscess. She'd been living with it actually for months and months and months. She knew that she needed dental care, but she had no way of getting dental care. And all she wanted was something to make her a little more comfortable for a little while. If she had basic dental care, she'd have had that taken care of months before and had to suffer way less. It's just a young woman with a painful jaw, ashamed to see that. And a healthcare system that spends $8,000 per capita ought to be able to help that young woman with her tooth. So I agree with Joe totally that dental care ought to be included. It shouldn't be two systems. It should be health care. The other thing about the fluoride, I think, without getting into the pros and cons, I think that the issue with a single-payer system is two things that are important to all of us, transparency and accountability. And so under a public system, everybody gets a say. You have a public process for determining what's covered. You have accountability for what decisions are made. And we all get a role in determining what kinds of health care is provided, instead of what we have now, which is that big corporations, these decisions are made in the boardroom of an insurance company rather than a public process.
I know. Those were the death panels are, as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. Those decisions about what we can get and what we don't get, they're made in the back room of the large insurance plans, and none of us has any say in that.
I want to let folks know at 9 o'clock, coming up on KBOO Community Radio, we will have One Land, Many Voices. The guests include Columbia University professor Rashid Khalidi, who will be talking about the struggle for Palestinian statehood. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, we'll hear Secret Funding by the Federal Reserve. It's a best of the Bernie Sanders Senate filibuster.
Oh, that's excellent.
Oh, he was fabulous.
Do stay tuned for that.
He was great.
Absolutely. And we have just a few minutes left with Dr. Paul Gorman this morning. Let's go ahead and look at the conference tomorrow. It is at the First Unitarian Church, 8:30 to 4:30 tomorrow.
That's right. Registration starts at 8:30. We wrap up at 4:30. It's a $20 registration fee to help us pay for the lunches and so forth. To go. They have scholarships that you can find out about on the website. But so that's right. There's a single-payer conference. I forget how many hundreds of registrants we have, but we're really thrilled that there's so much interest and activism about single-payer. And we hope everyone that can make it will make it. We'll work together to figure out how to bring single-payer about in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And if you can't make it, we'll have materials on the website and so forth afterwards.
And the website is singlepayeroregon.org, singlepayeroregon.org. This conference is being coordinated by Jobs with Justice and Physicians for a National Health Program, endorsed by Portland Labor, Faith, Social Justice, and Professional Organizations, There's a whole lot of them that have signed on to support this conference. And that is, again, one of the focuses is moving from theory into action.
Absolutely.
And actually invigorating the single-payer movement.
Absolutely. And thanks also. You know, Jobs with Justice has been key in getting this organized. Physicians for National Health Program, some of the other activists in the state, and the Unitarian Church and the Presbyterian Church who gave us the space and put up some money so we could actually do it. And we want to thank them because that's really making this possible
that's
to do
huge.
It all.
Thank you so much, Dr. Paul Gorman, for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting.
It's been a pleasure. And that's the best radio show name I've heard in ages, Positively Revolting. I love it.
Thank you.